I'm sorry if I ruined our little chat. But the thing is that there is some truth in it. And I was scared that you had found me out. And since we're being honest here, a lot of times I can be narrow-minded. But I try to make my friends think I'm not. And I assume that people with those do-rags will beat me for my money and I'll get shot. And I'm afraid one day I'll be a nobody. So I try to be better than all of you. Ooh, I'm trying to be honest with you. And I wish you'd be honest with yourself too. I'm trying to be honest with you. And I wish you'd be honest with yourself too. I desperately want everyone to like me. Even though I don't like everyone I know. And I hate those folks that are judgmental. Though I judge people by music, looks, and clothes. And the things that people do that I hate the most are the things I hate the most about myself. And since we're being honest here, I struggle with being generous and giving with a heart that's pure and true. I have no trouble doing my own thing, but it's hard while trying to follow Jesus too. And if my friends really knew the darkness of my heart, I probably wouldn't have a friend at all. Ooh, I'm trying to be honest with you, and I wish you'd be honest with yourself too. I'm trying to be honest with you, and I wish you'd be honest with yourself too. I'm sorry for calling you retarded. I shouldn't even use that word like that. So once again I'll say I'm very sorry, and I'd like to take it back.
All right, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Hi.
This is Nature Boy on K-Chung Radio. Today is Sunday,
November
the 5th. Yes, just the day before Marshall's birthday.
Yay.
How old are you going to be?
We're not talking about it.
How young are you going to be?
So young.
Really young. And I'm Michael, and I'm joined with here by Jess and Marshall.
Good morning.
Whose birthday it is tomorrow. this is Nature Boy, a general science podcast on K-Chung Radio, and
16:30 a.m. downtown Chinatown, L.A.
Yes, that is correct. Also streaming online, kchungradio.org/stream, and online iTunes, Stitcher,
all the things, the
other
the
podcast places. Yeah,
yeah.
Natureboythepodcast.com. I'm doing this for a while now, like three.
I just looked. 31 episodes today.
31 episodes, okay.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
What's that, 2.5 years?
We're really into commitment.
No, I think we passed the 3-year mark, but we haven't hit like every month, so.
What?
But we haven't missed that many months. I don't know. I think we have to do some math there.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
So today's topic is going to be bioremediation, which is like cleaning up stuff with.
But first,
biology.
The USDA and Donald Trump.
Yeah, so some current news. I was also going to play a song about sexual assault because it's been in the news, but I thought maybe it's a little heavy to start the morning off
with.
But in other news.
Consent is sexy.
Yes, it is. We endorse consent. The USDA guy, Sam Clovis, withdrew his nomination for chief scientist position at the USDA.
Something respectable.
Yes.
I mean, so, chief scientist, somebody who's not a scientist.
Right. So Sam Clovis did not have a science background, but I don't know if he has a science background, but he didn't have like a, definitely wasn't qualified for this job.
No.
As the chief scientist of the USDA. And was going to be in charge of a $3 billion, I think, research budget at least. The budget of the USDA is much larger, but I think what he was the research portion of it actually does not that much money, unfortunately.
$164 billion with a B.
But I think of
he was going to be in charge of the entire thing. Mm. So the largest portion of the USDA's budget, though, goes to food stamps and school lunch programs.
Right.
Which a lot of people don't know. They think it just goes to research, but actually it's to feeding the people.
Yes.
So he was going to have control over that. And you know what the administration thinks about handouts for the poor.
Right.
Non-working class.
Non-working class.
But working class.
But working class.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that is interesting. And apparently a lot of the people that that were being put in positions at the USDA were kind of these Trump supporters
temps.
From like long time ago. Yeah. But they didn't know what to do with them, so they just put them at the USDA.
Yeah.
That's a little scary, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this administration is scary because these people are just not qualified to be in these jobs. Also this guy, what was his name again?
Which one?
Clovis.
Yeah,
he was also a climate change denier and stuff, and you know, it's like that's kind of what the USDA's job is to do, is to generate, well, at least a research portion of it, is to generate, you know, food security in the face of climate change.
Yeah, so there's a list of all the departments that he was going to head. You want to hear some of these?
Yes.
We've got natural resources and environment. So this is one of the departments underneath the USDA. Food safety. Farm and foreign agricultural services. Research, education, and economics for food safety. Rural development. Marketing and regulatory programs, nutrition and consumer services, food nutrition and consumer services. So he was going to head all these departments.
Well, I'm glad that he's not going to anymore. I don't have like very much confidence though in whoever is going to be next in line for the nomination. I haven't had good surprises with this administration so far.
Yeah.
Well, I mean. It seems like it's being taken seriously what kind of a job this is because of how much of a ripple it's made, right? We're all talking about it.
But I don't feel... The thing that I literally just read, it doesn't seem like he withdrew his nomination because he felt like he wasn't...
Well, he was, like, pressured to, right?
He said that he didn't feel he would get fair consideration from the Senate, and then also... there's a quote that says, "The relentless assault on you and your team," this is to Trump, "seem to be a blood sport that only increases with intensity each day." So it's like, it seems like he didn't want to have to deal with all this public scrutiny that would go along with being nominated for the position, because he knew that he wasn't qualified, because there were all the, he was questioned about like what types of graduate courses he had taken in the hard sciences, and there were none.
Uh-huh.
So I think that he had seen like all of the other nominees and the things that they had gone through who had not been qualified for their positions, and he was basically like, "Nah, I don't want to have to, you know, I don't want people to see me go through that."
Yeah.
I don't think it was like this selfless, like, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not qualified."
He wasn't as shameless. Yeah, but like none of his other appointees have really been great for the department that they're, you know.
Yeah,
heading,
that's what I mean. I think that he knows that because he's already been like questioned ahead of time, and it's like shown that he's not technically qualified to head this department. And all of the other nominees, it's been a very similar situation. And then when they go up for the public nomination, like the in front of the Senate, the hearing, questioning,
mm-hmm.
whatever the heck it is,
whatever it's called, legal stuff.
Yeah. I don't do that stuff. It's been kind of like, I guess, embarrassing for them. Like, I mean, the entire country sees them get ripped apart, and they become jokes, like Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, I mean, part of me thinks that they just don't care because they're getting rich anyway, but maybe they do care a little bit.
They're already pretty rich.
Yeah.
Right. I think also an interesting thing is that Clovis, at least it's been talked about, that he denies climate change.
Right.
And so you're part of the department that's overseeing food security for the nation. Food security runs big with climate change because, as we all know, we're fighting. Do you say that right? Fighting climate change? We're trying to, like, come up with creative ways of growing more food in the face of climate change, which means that less land is available.
Yeah, that's, like, one of the biggest goals of the USDA.
Right. So they're just fundamentally opposed, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
For now.
Do you guys have any other science headlines, news, things to share?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, for some of the science insiders, Zymo and BWR are joining forces. So,
what are you talking about?
These are like suppliers.
I know.
I know the names.
BWR?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So these are kind of some big suppliers in biotechnologies and research, and so they're actually coming together. I think
they're merging.
Yeah, which is kind of big. Yeah,
a business merger.
Well, BWR is huge, and they're kind of the name in certain like cell culture.
I feel like they're sort of like. Oh, I was gonna say like the Walmart of
really,
yeah.
Like maybe like
well, Zymo. I feel like Zymo is for columns, right? Nobody actually buys columns from Zymo.
Really know a lot about Zymo.
Yeah, for people wondering, or like, where do you get science stuff, like things to do science? It's these companies
to buy them. Yeah. So I think that they're teaming up so that way BWR can bring a little legitimacy to
they
Zymo.
Have all the beakers, right. All the tubes.
Yeah. And this stuff is really expensive, so
it's
good when
all the chemicals.
Different companies come and compete because the Qiagen kits are kind of like the brand for your columns. So Zymo is also another name, but now they're going to be competing, and I'm really excited for that because that makes doing our research a little cheaper maybe. And also that means for the taxpayer too, right? So if it's cheaper for us, then we can do more or... You know, can cost less, but we'll just do more research. How about that? Anyway,
yes,
so.
Taxpayer money actually does, you know, it's important
our
for
research.
Funding because these things are really expensive.
Yeah.
And I think that they are so expensive because they know that they're grant funded, but I think that's besides the point. Anyway, I read a new study that came out. There was an algorithm that can predict if Twitter users are becoming mentally ill.
Wow.
Okay.
Go on.
Yeah. So it was like this algorithm that these group of scientists put together, and they had data from 105 patients with clinically diagnosed depression and 99 healthy controls, and then they I guess like their algorithm did machine learning to kind of see patterns in the text that they were using.
And
so depressed people. On social media, like Twitter specifically, they tended to use more negative words like no, never, and death.
Do you think that this like, carries over for all social media?
It probably does, right? Like, I don't think it's isolated to just Twitter. And fewer positive ones, so the other people used more words like happy and photo.
Like here's a photo of me having so much fun somewhere.
Yeah. I'm so happy.
Whereas the depressed people
like
are
I never take selfies.
I never take selfies, but here's one of me.
What else? Wow, I'm just like full of business news. Apparently, there's a huge market growing now for bioremediation. The topic for this month.
Plugging today's topic.
Yeah, totes. Because of all of the natural gas drilling that's happening in the middle of the country. So you have to clean up all of these wells because you use water and oil to, like, get in there.
Oh, like fracking?
Yeah, exactly. So cleaning, fracking, you gotta clean it up somehow. And how are they doing it? Well, how are they doing it? What would you think?
I don't know.
Go on. If you can't see my face, I'm really excited about Michael.
I feel like maybe it's... Is it with corn?
No. Are you leaving us on a cliffhanger?
No. Well, so... Okay. So cleaning up the environment from, like, industrial waste.
Uh-huh.
This is bioremediation, right? So this is kind of like the definition.
Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So, yeah, they're using bacteria.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, to clean it up.
I thought it was going to be corn because you work with corn.
I mean... We already make a lot of ethanol, right? So we fuel the environment. But yeah, what else? Sorry. I didn't get to finish that thought.
Sure.
Too much caffeine. $7 billion is what that's going to be worth annually.
Just what is?
The bacteria?
Just cleaning up, all of these, all of these drilling. $7 billion. So all of these biotech companies are trying to jump in there right now. Now's a good time to go into bioremediation.
So how are you feeling about industry versus academia post-grad life?
Oh.
I'm really excited about industry and...
You're excited about industry?
And my question, right?
So...
We were just talking about this before you got here.
Like what we wanted
to... The fate of what PhDs do with their degree is, like, not so... clear. I mean, academia is kind of the obvious choice, but it's really hard to get into.
But regardless,
as a research, and then there's industry, so you can go work for a company that does some science.
But
stuff.
You don't have to do like wet bench stuff, right? You can be a consultant.
I think I probably want to work at the bench. At least that's how I feel right now.
The bench being
like
where you
lab.
Do the science.
Yeah.
So be a researcher.
Well, I'd either want to go into academia or work at a bench.
Like. Okay.
I've gotten really excited about mentoring one-on-one and less excited about teaching a gigantic classroom of 300 students.
Oh, yeah. I always forget about that part.
So I like teaching the big class. I think I would like teaching the big classes anyway. I haven't taught a 300-student class, but I like teaching
there
students.
There are lots of junior colleges that are excited to take you on.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I want to do that, too.
Who knows?
I really like the one-on-one mentoring.
But, I mean, things like this, when you say, like there's these kind of new industries that are forming around new problems.
Yeah.
So, industry is also
it's big.
Exciting.
Yeah. They keep trying to get me. I'm like, give me a little more time to finish.
If you have suggestions for what I should do.
We can talk about it on my birthday off air, or we could just talk
about your future in general.
Michael is not sure what he would. And it's funny because.
Well, yeah, it's like getting to the point where I really need to
figure it out,
yeah.
Yeah.
Probably work for
forever.
Everybody tells me that I should, like, I mean, people that don't know me are like, you should grow weed. And I'm like, yeah.
I know. That's the first thing they tell all of us.
Well, yeah, anyone there, oh, you're a plant biologist? Like, you like weed, right?
Yeah.
Something fun for our listeners, all of our greenhouses.
So much money.
Yes, all of our greenhouses right now have, like, not spray paint, because you know how they use the white powder to, like, cover the greenhouses?
Oh, yeah.
Because we have too much sun in Riverside.
Right.
Yes.
So they use that to dampen the sun. So people have been writing on all the greenhouses, like, phone numbers and stuff to call for these different producers because they want our scientists. These little mom and pop.
I never
home
called
shop.
One of the phone numbers.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we are going to take a quick break and then get into the main topic of today's Nature Boy, which
bioremediation.
Is bioremediation. And I'm gonna play that sexual assault song because I just feel like it.
Okay.
Sorry if it's heavy.
It's fine.
Happy
People
Sunday.
People need to hear about it.
That's true.
Need
we need
talk
to talk about
it
more.
are back. This is Nature Boy on K-Tring Radio, 1630 AM, broadcasting live from Chinatown, Los Angeles.
November 5th. 2017.
Yes.
Wow.
You the time just thing. Changed. I thought I was late. An hour late. I was only...
We were all freaking out in late. Our cars.
Today's topic is bioremediation on Nature Boy. Such an exciting topic.
It is. I think. Okay. I think it is.
Yeah. I picked it. And I have to admit, like, I had...
She is the least prepared.
I'm the least prepared. Also, I have two selfish reasons for why I picked it. The first being that I'm mentoring those kids, and they're doing a project on phytoremediation remediation, and I was like, I know nothing about this. And then also, I was hoping that I could, like, tie it into World War I somehow, which I don't know.
Can you explain that?
Because there's a bunch of heavy metals in the soil of the battlefield of World War I, and I was like, oh, maybe I could work this in.
Because you just want to talk about World War I?
Because I just want to talk about World War
I. She's becoming a history buff.
Do you usually like death? Things involving death?
I think we already
death
know.
Death and never.
And no?
Yeah, I think we all already know this. I couldn't really do it. I did look up the World War I stuff, and then when it didn't pan out, I was like, well, I can't.
That was a good effort.
Yeah.
Thank you for subjecting us to this topic. And the listeners, maybe they're really interested.
I mean, it is a relevant
Fukushima?
Topic.
Fukushima?
I think it is a relevant topic, oil. Especially in our political climate where, you know, basically conservatives don't think that pollution or anything like environmental degradation is a problem.
Which is really interesting because they're really economy focused.
Uh-huh.
And when you're using natural resources to fuel the economy...
God gave us those resources to make money.
Use them up.
All just using our God-given resources.
Money.
So bioremediation, I guess, is, we could start off, it's like a branch of studying environmental toxicology. So it's like a field of science where you study how toxins enter the environment and basically what their ultimate fate is.
I see it more like microbiology because I just like it from that perspective.
It does involve a lot of microbiology. All of these topics, like environmental toxicology and bioremediation, they're very interdisciplinary, so they bring a lot of different fields of science together to solve these real-world problems. So environmental toxicology, at least, it's a study of like how toxins enter the environment and what happens to them. So there's a lot of different things that could be toxins. There's like... pharmaceuticals or pesticides, I said pesticides twice, herbicides and pesticides, and other things
heavy
like
metals.
heavy metals, yeah, radiation, you know, there's a lot of bad things that enter the environment.
Be scared.
A lot of the times we don't know what their actual impact is on certain things are, so this whole field of study kind of got started by, it says... In this Wikipedia article, it says that Rachel Carson is considered the mother of environmental toxicology. I don't know how true that is because I am not in this field. But she wrote the book or the publication called Silent Spring, which was the publication that kind of followed what happened with what happens to DDT's effect on bird eggs. And so there was like a silent spring because none of the... It's called silent spring, because none of the birds hatched. Mm-hmm. Because we were using DDT as a, it was a pesticide, I think, in the 1950s, 40s, and we didn't know at the time that it had this effect on bird shells.
Also, there is, an industry behind them,
mm-hmm.
Right? So this is kind of the issue with the bees.
It turns out, though, that I think that DDT is actually really effective for controlling mosquitoes. So they're, like, using it still now in Africa to
There's DDT in those candles. You know the candles that you, like, put up on the picnic benches to keep the mosquitoes away? Mm-hmm. You're still allowed to use those, just not, I think, industrial.
And there's a lot of other examples of things that basically we don't know are bad for you at the time. And later on we find out that they actually have some kind of toxic effect. And then we have to invent ways of, or think of ways to clean it up, because those chemicals still persist in the environment. So there's a lot of DDT, for example, I think, in the Salton Sea out by Coachella.
So we're talking about DDT, but, I mean, we can even think about this with respect to our plastic bottles.
Right? Yeah.
I think there was just an article about the Caribbean now has, like, a huge plastic island, like, 4 or 5 miles wide.
Yeah, it's not always, you know, like, chemicals or toxins that we're putting into the environment, just things that we use also that we that are not good.
That are damaging, right? Damaging the ability of the environment to replenish itself.
Yeah. So things like single-use plastics as well. So that's we're getting into now bioremediation. So that's basically the study of how to treat this type of stuff and how do we deal with contaminated water. And I think actually people don't realize that we're using products of bioremediation all the time, because like basically every water plant, like sewage plant or drinking water yep. municipality plant, uses some form of bioremediation to clean up their water, because water that we get from other sources is really dirty and it has to be cleaned up somehow. So it uses like some biological processes. Others are not biological and they use like filtering and stuff, but it still needs to be processed in order to clean up this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so mainly I guess it's done through microbes or like bacteria and fungi. It's mostly all bacteria actually. But it can also be done with things like plants.
Sunflowers. That's what they used for Fukushima.
Yeah, so yeah. A lot of plants can take up things like heavy metals in soils or radio isotopes. So they can sequester them in the plant, which I don't know what you then do with the plant material. But
well, if it's just a heavy metal, then maybe it doesn't really matter because the plants need the heavy metals. What?
Yes, they do need they do need heavy metals, I guess so.
Well, so they get concentrated, mm-hmm. right? And then, I don't know, you put them in a warehouse, you take all those sunflowers to a warehouse, and you just say, stay there? Oh, no. How do you get rid of the isotopes? Well, we use the isotopes, so maybe you can...
I don't know.
Sell it back to the universities for research? We do.
Because you're concentrating whatever's like in the soil or whatever into the plants. You're
That's
just
right.
like moving it.
That's right.
And then what do you do with the plants? Burn them? Or they think it
well,
just
I mean, they have
the
half-lives, right? These
yeah.
isotopes have half-lives.
That's true. Yeah.
They could. Yeah, they could. Plants could turn them into different forms, actually, that are not as like dangerous. That's probably what actually happens.
I like how we just talked through that.
Yeah.
Like a think tank right here.
Yeah, because the plants are trying to get it out of the soil so that you can...
They can use it in something else.
You can use
else.
That area. And then if you just needed to take the plant somewhere else for some amount of time until, like, you know, the half-life was done, whatever, and then you could throw the plants away. But then you're able to use that field. In the
right.
meantime.
Because maybe what people don't know, isotopes, so, like, what is the definition of an isotope? Of, like, phosphorus.
So, it's, yeah. so normal atoms of elements have a certain number of electrons on them, and so that corresponds to their, basically every element has a number, it'll have, like, 14, 15, 16, up 72, whatever, many numbers. I don't know how many numbers there are.
But not... So the defining characteristic is the protons, right? Not the electrons.
Sorry, the protons, yes.
Yeah.
The if it has more or less, it could still be...
It's the neutrons, I
Thank
thought.
You.
Yeah.
So
Sorry.
The protons define the
Can
element...
Let me finish.
Oh,
my sentence.
Go on.
Okay. No, go ahead.
No, we're it. All excited about that. So go on, Michael. Tell me about it.
So if it...
No, by the way, he's pulling this out of his head, and Jess has the internet open.
Yeah, so you should just read it because I don't want to make a mistake.
I already knew the answer, okay? I already knew the answer. I just wanted to be sure.
No one's calling you out. We're just saying.
You did call me
no,
out.
No, no, no. I'm
no
saying now Michael
out?
Is going to do it.
Okay. I took chemistry a long time ago.
Go ahead.
You can, you
okay.
Can
so do it. Do the isotope. Do the isotope.
Do it.
I don't want to now. I'm scared.
You can do it.
Okay. I forgot where I was. You just say it.
Just say what an atom is.
An atom is a single
not,
is a single unit of an element.
Okay.
The
on.
Smallest unit of an element.
So what's an atom is made up of?
An atom is made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons.
Okay, good.
Yes.
What defines the number for an atom?
The number of protons.
Okay, cool.
Now you're just quizzing me. Okay, keep going.
Cool. And then what would make an isotope of that element?
If it has the wrong number of electrons.
No. That's an ion. So now you've made it an ion, right? It has a charge.
Okay, so it has the wrong number of neutrons?
That's right.
Okay.
Because the protons and neutrons are
balance
the same
each other
number.
Out. This is probably really exciting for the listeners.
Yeah, no. But so that's what an isotope is, though. So it's just like a heavier or lighter form
of the
an
same
element.
Yeah. So you can have...
and that causes radioactivity.
Here, too, because neutrons don't have any charge.
It's out of balance.
Right? No, they don't have any charge. So what it basically is, like, the glue that holds the core of an atom together is either, like, really unstable and about to fall apart, or it's going to collapse in on itself. And if people don't know... That's how atom bombs work. And also, like...
we did a whole show on that.
Yeah. So that's the importance of an isotope and why we have to get them out of the environment.
So I guess the radio comes in to play because of, like, the spinning of the electrons, I'm guessing, creating some kind of radio.
Radioactivity?
Oh. Yeah, so then you have quarks, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
We're not going there. This isn't a physics show, okay?
It's clear that we're botanists now. Wait, what's an isotope?
anyway, so...
this soft sciences.
Yeah. So, but plants can pull them out of the environment. Bacteria can pull them out of the environment.
Bacteria can use them as energy sources, typically, is what how bacteria are used to clean something. So there's... for example, a lot of oil spills are typically treated with bacteria because they can use the hydrocarbons in oil as a food source, basically.
That's right.
So they eat it.
Yum, yum.
But it's a pretty slow process. A lot of bacteria is also used to clean our water before we drink it. So there's basically tanks and, like, a water treatment that has a lot of bacteria in it, and water sits in there and it eats a lot of the... nasty stuff that's in the water.
Well, and kind of a cool aside that I figured out when we were doing research for the show was that different food companies use bacteria to break down proteins to give specific flavors that their competitors can't produce because they don't have the strain of bacteria.
That's
what?
Oh.
Yeah.
Like what?
Like... am I allowed to say, like, companies? And, like, soft drink companies, like big soft drink companies that you wouldn't think of, they use their specific flavor. They get their specific flavors from bacteria. Isn't that kind of cool? So that's why the market for us, back to biotech and not being in academia, is getting bigger and bigger because these companies want more life scientists to come through and help them get life science patents, so that way they can secure their place in the market.
That's comforting.
Right?
Yeah.
And more pharmaceutical companies are taking us on, too, because the genetics component to everything.
Yeah. The genetics component. Wait, what do you mean?
The genetics component?
Yeah.
So before...
therapy.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh?
So
gene therapy.
Oh, I see.
So certain chemicals, like pharmaceutical companies have put out, it only works on a certain number of the population, right? They don't actually work on everyone.
Yeah, there's some sort of, like, lung cancer treatment that's out right now. I've been seeing the commercials on Hulu that it's like, oh, if you have this specific
you can get gene therapy?
Yeah, it's like if you test for this specific, like, gene, then this treatment will likely work for you. It won't work for everybody who has lung cancer, but in, like, tests, they've basically seen that a certain, like, group of the population, it works for them.
Yeah, I've seen ads for, like, women to get the, like, BRCA1/2 tests done, see if they have that allele of the gene.
BRCA?
Yeah.
BRCA.
Well, there's no A in there, right?
There is.
I'm just saying an acronym. BRC. BRCA. Isn't it BRCA?
BRCA?
BRCA.
So
BRCA?
BRCA?
Yeah,
but
BRCA?
You have to say BRCA? The acronym
correct. Okay. Because it sounds like BRCA.
So, but back to...
I've never thought about it that way. It's just, it's BRCA.
Okay.
So, bioremediation also inside of our bodies. Uh-huh. So remember, I think we've talked about this multiple times, and we always talk about old shows where we've talked about everything, because now we're at 31 shows and we've talked about just about anything. But bioremediation inside of our body. So we even have to clean up our insides, because bad bacteria can start to be fostered, and you have to put in competing bacteria.
Like, right? When you eat yogurt?
Exactly.
Probiotics.
Your probiotics.
Yes.
Oh.
Right. So when you eat too many cheeseburgers, you get like certain bacteria that start to grow and cause inflammation that can lead to you becoming obese just because you ate like... And it's more the bacteria than it's the fact that you had like 100 cheeseburgers.
The bacteria make you fat?
Yeah. Yeah, they actually have been able to cure people of diabetes, chronic obesity.
Yeah, with like the rats that there's like skinny and obese rats, and they'll like basically swap their like gut microbes, and then like the obese mice will get skinny. It's like,
yeah.
It's a matter of bacteria. Yeah.
Jess
so.
Is like, wait a minute.
What?
I can eat
just like
McDonald's for the rest
shock.
Of my life if I just eat a poop pill.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to be working out and doing all this stuff that I'm doing.
Fecal transplants are a thing now, because like people that think that they have like shitty metabolism will
ba-dunch.
Yeah. Will want to like fix it or improve it somehow. Like it, I guess it's a point to it's really bad for them.
So that was a solid transition for the fact that India is trying to use bacteria to clean up the Ganga River, the Ganges.
Yes.
So
I think it's Ganges, right?
Yeah. That's what I've been told my entire childhood. And
I thought it had an
E
at the end.
Yeah, Ganges.
But this is
Ganga, water.
Oh.
Yeah. But so they're using microbes to clean the sewage out of the water to make it more, I don't know.
More cleaner?
Yeah, because I think people in India use it for like a lot of different things.
They put dead bodies in it.
That's right. Because you're closer.
They
you're,
do.
Yeah.
Yes.
We won't go there. That's not that's not my philosophical spot. So,
not
mine
either.
Yeah. But anyway, so they're using bioremediation to clean up the Ganges. That's interesting.
So, because it seems like
gut microbes.
Because gut microbes, yes. It seems like bacteria get a lot of the attention or a lot of the focus for doing these types of...
Rather than the plants?
Rather than plants or fungi. Fungi?
Ooh,
fungi.
That's a good one.
A paper that I read actually when doing research for this show was basically calling out there's like a missed, you know, opportunity for researchers to look into fungi for cleaning up more stuff, because they can grow a lot faster, and they have what are called hyphae, which is like getting hyphae in the club.
So
it's always
yes,
funny to learn
yes.
that in school. But they have these mycelial networks that are very like fine fibrous hairs and basically branch out a lot, so they cover a lot of surface area. So
fun fact,
yes,
there is one fungus, one organism, that's a fungus that has these hyphae that stretch from the Rockies all the way to the Atlantic. One
yeah,
organism.
I think it's the largest organism on Earth is a fungus.
Isn't that crazy?
If you did not know that.
Bioremediation.
And also, like, they have a lot of benefits. So they can fill in pore spaces in soil. Mm-hmm. What else is good about them?
They break down nitrogen.
A lot of high surface area. They
do they break down nitrogen
they
or
do
phosphorus?
They could break down a lot of things that bacteria can break down, but they tend not to be obligate.
What does that mean?
Biotrophs of that particular compound. So, like, bacteria tend to be, like, they have to consume, like, petroleum, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can't live without it.
So they're more controllable when we put them in the environment to do a specific job, right?
The bacteria?
Yeah.
So I guess
like,
so, yeah.
Yeah, like when we put them in the Gulf to clean up the what you call it, oil spill.
Yeah, they're, like,
they
they're only going to live off of that oil, and they can't live off of anything else.
And
but
they just die.
But fungus in the soil... Well, fungus is not really great for aquatic applications, but they can live in soil really well, and they can clean up things in soil.
But they sound less controllable than bacteria for bioremediation purposes.
I don't know. I don't know if they're less controllable, but they're just not obligate... they don't have to consume the contaminant. They could consume other things, other forms of carbon.
Huh.
Yeah.
Other than carbon. Fossil.
Or,
nitrogen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. If people don't. Pete Moss.
Pete Moss. Are you just saying words?
Yeah. Just trying to get
Pete Moss. Boss
grass. No, sorry. It wasn't Pete Moss. It's, what do you call it? That grows on, like, the rocks and the redwood.
Lichen?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are symbiotic relationships between fungus and algae.
Yeah, those are. Mm-hmm. I thought those are plants.
I wouldn't call them.
Well, they're like in a weird, weird
lichen
thing.
Yeah,
I know they're called lichens, but they're
kind of like coral, I guess. Like, but corals,
not
like,
they're not plants. They're like in a middle zone.
Yes, and coral is kind of like an animal.
Kind of like rock.
Kind of like a rock, kind of like an animal, kind of. It's a good description.
I don't know why Pokemon just jumped into my head right there.
So isn't your research kind of like bioremediation in a way?
Michael is the closest to that.
Yeah, I'm probably the closest. So our lab uses a lot of biochar, which is a charcoal-like substance that you add to soil. And charcoal is also used in a lot of filtering media, like to clean water and stuff. It's depending on the way it's produced, it can have like very similar properties to activated carbon, which is what's used
to. Why are you putting it in the soil?
Because it holds a lot of water and nutrients for plants. It's like a sponge.
It's kind of cool though, right? Because the native Brazilians, right, were the ones who started doing this kind of, I guess you could call it composting. Would composting be bioremediation?
I don't think so.
Really? Because you're taking something that's completely useless in the environment.
Like, I guess so.
Right?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you have to like get it back to something useful.
It's definitely related to just like degradation, you know. Bioremediation and degradation are kind of like
you're using like fire.
Because bioremediation, I think, is like a very specific type of just like degradation that happens.
It's like directed, so it's not allowed. To be like composting isn't allowed to be bioremediation.
No, I think I guess you can say it is.
But
yes.
I guess I think of bioremediation is like there being some sort of like
toxin.
Yeah, a contaminant that you are needing to
remedy.
Yeah.
Bioremedy.
So,
go ahead.
Yes, it was discovered in the Amazon forest. Basically, researchers noticed that there was like these patches of land that a lot of plants were growing on, and like the surrounding land that was barren. And so they dug up and found that the soil was actually really black there. And it's because the Amazonian people used to basically make these big fire pits, and they would bury all their trash in it, and then when they covered it, it would turn into charcoal, all of the stuff, and it would enrich the soil. Uh-huh. And plants would grow better there.
And
it also, fire is also just a natural part of a lot of ecosystems. So, like, a lot of our plants in California respond to fire. That's like
the redwoods.
It's like a signal for them to grow. And a lot of that, it could be because of. There's also like a lot of, you know, charcoal that gets deposited in soils because of our forest fires. So it's kind of a natural process that happens.
Also, plants use this to try to outcompete other large plants because I don't know how they sense this. It's pretty cool. But they know that when a fire happens, that a large plot of land has just been cleared. And so you can plant your seeds there and they won't have to compete with larger plants for the access to sunlight.
Yeah.
So,
there's a researcher at UCR who studies this. His name is, what is his name? Dan Koenig. It's not Dan Koenig.
No? It's the new guy.
Dave Nelson.
Oh,
PhD.
Oh
yeah. Yeah.
There's these compounds called carrakins that trigger seed germination on.
Michael's impressing himself, by the way, as he's like pulling out of his head.
On some species of plants.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Would you say that it's also bioremediation if, say, a plot of land used to grow plants and then, you know, you suck all the life out of it and then you put something like the biochar into it? And
I love that.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah.
Like making crop rotation.
Making unarable land, like arable, yeah. And you could do that with like things like compost and biochar additions. It's also.
But biochar itself isn't really a nutrient. It's like a substrate for nutrient deposition. Sorry if I had to use a bunch of terrible words there.
Yeah, it's basically just carbon. And it's like very stable carbon?
Mediating the nutrient deposition, right? Like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like magna. It's like a funnel. It's acting like a funnel, and so just like grabbing all the nutrients from the environment and like sucking them into one spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so because like it's used in things like Brita filters, it just like removes a lot of impurities from water. So yeah,
because it just grabs them.
Yeah. It's like a sponge. And it has a lot of negative charges on it also.
Really?
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Huh. I like that.
Yes. So that's my research.
And kind of how bioremediation takes multiple forms, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I would call that bioremediation. Composting is like I would see that.
I guess it wouldn't be considered bioremediation because you're not using something living to clean up a toxin, but it comes from living stuff. So charcoal is produced from plant material.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, because composting you have to use like worms and stuff, right?
Yes.
Or just slow. There's like different kinds of forms of slow is just like using bacteria to break it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think also like most of the major oil spills have been cleaned up with using bacteria,
that's
like
right.
The BP oil spill and Exxon Valdez.
And that's what they're trying to do for breaking down plastics now in the environment because our plastics are so prevalent all over the planet that it's created like a layer in a geo like record of plastic.
Oh,
and
gross.
So, yeah. So now researchers have developed. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like there's a painting on the wall.
A like form of plastic eating bacteria.
So, in regards to phytoremediation, do we have any information?
Nope.
Yeah. No. Well,
I wanted to talk about phytoremediation or using plants to clean up stuff because I think that GMOs have a lot of opportunity for this.
Okay.
So I think it's not really being utilized right now, but GMOs could technically be engineered to remove certain things out of the environment. To my knowledge, I'm pretty sure that there's no plants that are like approved for this currently. All the GMOs that are approved by the EPA, USDA, and what's the third one? USDA, FDA, are just primarily like BT, and
so bacteria are the only GMOs that are approved so far.
What do you mean?
Oh, these bacteria that we use currently for bioremediation are GMOs.
And there's also some GMOs that are used for like things like I think cheese production or
delicious
like
soft drinks,
yogurts and things like that. So, but there's no plants that I know of that are approved for these types of purposes, and I'm kind of wondering why not.
like a random question that any professor would ask you with 15 minutes. Design an experiment. Like, how would you do that with plants? How would you use bioremediation, not using like the sunflower example?
How would you do a GMO like bioremediation plant? Okay,
yeah,
like for
plants.
Example, if there is a area of land that has that has high salinity, you can use plants that are hyperaccumulators of salt, and maybe upregulate that gene.
Would they just concentrate the salt though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would just concentrate the salt in the plants, and they actually do this for patches of land that are salty, but they use naturally. Plants that are like naturally salt accumulators, but you know maybe they can find similar things in other problems. That like there's also like hyperaccumulators of zinc and other heavy metals, and so if those genes can be upregulated, I think that they can.
What's to stop them from just like crossing with other plants in the environment and messing with the?
So this is my oral exam on. So what's to stop them from?
So one of the reasons I love studying
pollen sterile.
Ah, all right, get it.
Well, is it really a problem for?
Yeah, because if you're overexpressing, like, say, some sort of heavy metal like transporter, it may have like a specificity to that heavy metal, but like non-specific binding to other heavy metals, and like it had there are like very specific like pathways for keeping those transporters on the membrane of like say the root system. And if you were to contaminate like the wild type population,
mm-hmm.
I mean, with that gene, it could F things up.
Yeah, because you don't know about the balance.
Yeah,
because
it could deplete the soil. Like, say if it was like an iron transporter,
well,
it could deplete
like
the soil. Like, you don't want to keep that, because if they're not always on the membrane, like they only get turned on at certain times. But if you were constitutively expressing it.
But
know?
I think if an area is like heavily contaminated with something like salt, you're probably not going to have a lot of plant life that's growing there. And so if you introduce a species, this is where ecology comes in and is also important. It's a valid science.
Thank you so much for that input.
If there's no natural, you know, population that's it's going to outcross with or hybridize with, I don't see why that would be a problem.
Touché. Although then you have to consider the pollinators, right? Pollinators,
yes,
that are there,
sure,
in the environment as well.
But if there's not a high plant population, there's probably not going to be a high pollinator population.
Where on earth is there not a high plant population?
The bees are leaving. The bees are leaving.
They're going to Mars. They're just like,
yeah,
leaving
everywhere.
The bees are disappearing. We all know it.
Yeah.
Nobody knows why.
They figured that out. We talked about this. It's pesticides.
Oh.
Wow, guys. I'm glad to hear.
No, they're actually, I did read that there's a new class of, I don't know, fungicide. It's a seed treatment. They're called neonicotinoids.
Okay.
It's going off of memory. And they are destroying bee populations.
Interesting.
And they're used at in, like, super tiny amounts, so scientists didn't think that it would be a problem, but it's a
obviously
problem.
Obviously a problem.
Because they don't even treat the whole plants with it. They just treat the seeds. And I guess, but it's enough of a concentration where it affects the bees.
Hmm. That's fun. So bioremediation.
So cleaning up things like neonicotinoids.
Well,
usually
how about just cleaning up our plastics, cleaning up our oil spills, cleaning up our Fukushima's.
World War I battlefields.
Yeah, and using fungus to decompose all those dead bodies.
I guess to summarize this topic, there are a lot of scientists working on this around the world, and they tend to be very specific applications. So in doing the research for this show, I thought a lot of them really sounded boring, because it's like development of a new strain of bacteria to clean up whatever toxin, and it's just like, it's very specific, but scientists are doing this work around the world.
Well, and the economy for it is getting bigger and bigger every year, right? So there's a need for it because we're so dependent on the environment, right? And it's
how we clean up a lot of our mistakes,
yeah,
is using these living organisms to do the work for us.
And
I think plants and fungi tend to be underutilized for these purposes, and there's maybe a bigger avenue of opportunity in those areas of research.
But they're less controllable, I would say. I would argue.
Bacteria. I think you can control bacteria pretty well.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying. It's like,
oh,
because fungi and plants can grow more wildly, I guess.
I just wasn't paying attention, that's why.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know my birthday's coming up, and
yeah,
you really
I'm so excited for
your
birthday.
But anyway, yeah, that was fun.
It was fun.
That was a fun
show.
What
did
we?
It was fun even though it was boring.
not a super exciting topic, but important.
I like the topic.
You guys can thank me right now.
I like it. Thank you. Thank you, Jess.
I liked it too.
For giving me exactly what I needed.
Happy birthday.
Sometimes I don't even realize how much I remember. I just like start talking, and then
you're like, I'm so smart.
So smart.
I know what an isotope is.
Kind of.
Thank you guys for tuning
in. I found out
in
that I had a vague idea of what an isotope was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was enough to where I knew,
yeah,
that I knew. You know?
You knew. It's, you knew.
Thank you, everyone, for spending Sunday with us. Sunday morning.
And happy birthday to Marshall.
Yeah.
This has been another episode of Nature Boy on KTRN Radio.
Bye.
See you guys next time.
16:30 a.m.
Thank you.